Memories can be interesting things, not only for what we remember, but what we forget. They can provide great insights into individuals. The bad memories can be as insightful, if you will, as the good memories can be. And case in point is one memory that I'm reminded of from time to time. When I was about 9 or 10, my brothers and I neglected to give my mom a gift on Mother's Day. And my dad came to us later that day. My mom was obviously disappointed, but I only knew this because he came and took us to task for not getting her a gift. And of course, we made our usual excuses, not having enough money or not thinking it was important after all. Didn't mom already know that we loved her, sort of thing? That didn't go over very well. My dad made it very, very clear to us that even if it was expected, it was our obligation to make a special effort from time to time to show her that we loved her, that we cared about her. The act of giving can have a dramatic impact on people. Perhaps you've remembered something in the news. I remember one individual in New England. One of these bachelors, a quiet fellow all of his life. He had worked at some university, had retired, and he spent all of his time in the library, and people just figured he was filling his time. Well, they found out later what he was doing was he'd spent his days going over various stock information. He had amassed a fortune in his retirement, and he left all that money to the university when he died. Very quiet, but that gift made a huge impact and actually changed some people's thoughts in terms of what they thought of him. While many times this type of public giving is done to establish a legacy, many individuals that are especially wealthy will do this to maybe establish their name being put on a building or a chair in a university or something. Oftentimes giving is done can also be done in a proper manner to capture attention, because giving is part of God's way of life. I hope we all understand that. I hope I'm preaching to the choir today, but the question I want to ask is, do we reflect God's giving way of life? And today we're going to take a look at what I call the doctrine of giving. And I'd like to start in James chapter 1. When we put forth the effort to be a giver, God responds with blessings. But the act of giving begins with God. James 1, and in verse 17, James here writes, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning." Every good gift comes from God to begin with. Now, think about that. I think part of why we have increasing troubles even within this country is that we've become increasingly ungrateful for things that we have. You know, the poorest individuals in this nation live like kings compared to many parts of the world. But let's just step back and look at physical life. God didn't have to create mankind. He chose to, because he has a plan. He wants to expand his family. That life that he gives us, and all that he gives us that goes with that life. I'm always impressed when I watch one of the science channels, you know, whatever it happens to be, and they're talking about various aspects of the uniqueness of this planet we live on. You know, it's fine-tuned. One astrophysicist said the Earth is primed for life. We're at just the right distance from the sun. We have just the right tilt of the Earth. We have just the right amount of water, oxygen, you know, all kinds of various things. God's gift to us in that way. Let's look at it from a spiritual perspective, the gift of his law. I remember a sermon at a feast. This is probably 1986 or so. Czechoslovakia, pastor that was giving a speech, he was talking about laws and how the world would change with just the observance of one thing from God's instruction. He used the example of stealing, not stealing. He said, he pulled out a wad of keys. I still remember this. Maybe some of you have a ring like that. And he said, all of these would go away. I wouldn't need them anymore. I mean, think about that. If this nation, if this world practiced just one of the Ten Commandments thoroughly, what that would change. But even if they've not to this point, you and I have that gift. You and I can frame our life based on that knowledge and understanding. We have the gift of Christ's sacrifice. We wouldn't be sitting here without that. We wouldn't be able to go before Him in our prayers and ask for forgiveness when it's shown to us that we've done wrong. We wouldn't be able to even have that understanding that we would need to. For those whom God has called, He also gives us His Holy Spirit, that we can begin to take on His mind, that we can change and shed this carnality and become more like Him. He gives us, and all of mankind, His mercy and His patience. I'm glad He's not like me most of the time. I mean, we mistakenly think God is indifferent if they believe in God at all. He's not. He's patient. And I think probably more than anything else that we should consider is that God gives us His love and everything that that means. Now then, as we read here in James 1:17, every good gift comes from God. But then God expects us then to follow His example. He's not just doing for us, He's doing for us as an example that we're supposed to follow. We'll come back to that thought a little bit more here in a moment. But I have a quote here from John Templeton. I found it very insightful in this regard. He says, "Happiness comes from giving, not getting. If we try hard to bring happiness to others, we cannot stop it from coming to us also. To get joy, we must give it, and to keep joy, we must scatter it." I see a lot of biblical principles in that. I hope you will as well as we go through this. I'd like to turn next to Proverbs chapter 11. We remember givers in our lives, and God does too. I remember, maybe I've told this story before, all of my brothers, I have four brothers, so there's five boys in the family. All of the boys learned to play some musical instrument. My mom was a piano teacher. She tried piano, didn't work. She, I guess, hoped other things would take. They never did. The best she got was me playing the radio. That's the joke in the family. I actually gave her the cartoon the one time, if God had intended me to play the piano, He would have given me 88 fingers. A little boy sitting at a keyboard. What she did for me, rather than fight that battle, which I'm happy that she did not, she paid for art lessons, which helped me see a possibility of using a talent that I had for a career that I did for 26 years. Proverbs 11, and in verse 24, says, "There is one who scatters, yet increases more. There is one who withholds more than is right, but it leads to poverty." You know, some of the cheapest people in the world are the wealthiest people in the world. Now, they see that as the reason they got wealthy. But God says here, that's not a principle that works very well. Verse 25, "The generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. The people will curse him who withholds grain, but blessing will be on the head of him who sells it." It's an interesting thought here. Remember what John Templeton said? He says, to keep joy, we must scatter it. That's what the Proverbs is writing about here. We must give those things out. You know, one of the interesting things is to try to outgive God. We cannot outgive God. And we can break a cycle of lean times by giving. That's hard to accept when it's lean, isn't it? We don't think we have the ability. And giving can be in all phases of our life. We might think that's something for later on when we're doing well or when we're retired and we have that kind of money banked up, hopefully. But that's something that we should practice all the time. We have the example in Luke 21 of this. This is the widow's mite. One of the interesting things that Christ did, that I'll even try to do it at times, is that He watched people. He watched what they were doing. You can tell a lot when people don't realize they're being watched because they kind of reveal themselves in certain ways. Christ did this, and in this case, He used this as a teaching moment. Luke 21 and verse 1, "He looked up and He saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury." Now, He's on the Temple Mount. They're outside the temple area, and this treasury was not an offering. This was up to the individual what they would do. This money was used for the upkeep of the temple. It wasn't anything commanded by God. So Christ is sitting there and He's watching individuals put in, and probably by their dress more than anything else, He could tell who the rich were and who they weren't, and he's watching this. In verse 2, he saw then a certain poor widow putting in 2 mites. You know, in our culture, in this country right now, we don't value pennies. You see them all over the place, don't you? In fact, in most retail establishments, they got the little cup there. If you don't want the penny, you can throw it in. If somebody's a penny short, they can take it out. This is a comparable thing. It's nothing in terms of monetary value. But notice what he says. Truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all, more than anyone else, he says. For these out of their abundance have put in the offerings for God, but she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood she had. She didn't have the extra money, but she did it anyway, because she was giving to God in the only way that she could. Now, you can make an argument as to why. She should have had family being responsible to take care of her. There should have been other individuals helping, especially based on the law, in terms of the Old Testament, what they were supposed to do to help widows and so forth. And I can only imagine the blessing that God brought to her for this. Let's turn next to 2 Corinthians. Paul encouraged this. As the New Testament church was founded, there were various congregations that needed assistance. It's not always about money. It can be, oftentimes is, but in 2 Corinthians 8 and in verse 1, he says, "Moreover, brethren, we have made known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality." They were facing hard times, and yet they found a way to give to others. "For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints." Their service in time and effort. Verse 5, "And not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us, by the will of God." Gifts of time, gifts of service. If we move across the book or the page, depending on your Bible, in chapter 9, 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 6, oftentimes we read this in context of a holy day offering, but that's certainly not the only time to address this or remember it. It says, "But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver." The attitude of the giving. That's what many perhaps missed in the example of that widow's mite. She certainly didn't have much to give, but she was not doing it grudgingly. If you have very little, you want to hold on to what you have, don't you? Normally, humanly. But we're reminded here, God wants us to be cheerful about these things. Verse 10, notice this, that now may he who supplies need to the sower, the bread for food, supply and multiply the seed you have sown and increase the fruits of your righteousness, that God may multiply. So to step back and look at this from a personal example then, if we are to be a cheerful giver and we're to scatter these seeds, if you will, what kind of harvest are we reaping? You know, this summer, the July was just unbearable, wasn't it? But, you know, as I drive out of my area where I live and I go out to do various things, I look at all the farmers' fields around me, and I have never seen such good crops of corn and soybean. There was something about the heat and the humidity this year that just really suited those crops. Those farmers had to plant those fields, though. They had to do the effort. They had to put it out there. That's an analogy that's worth remembering for us spiritually. We sow crops in the things that we do, in the service that we give. Verse 14 of the same chapter here, and he says, "And by their prayer to you, who long for you because of the exceeding grace of God in you, thanks be to God for his indescribable gift." His gift. Even though they were doing it, it's his gift again. Going back to the gift in the early part of chapter 8. the gift of giving, and the attitude to want to, the attitude of wanting to give. Why did God call us? We know from John 6:44 that He did. It's by His will that He decided. That's probably a question we couldn't really answer. Why us out of all the other 6 billion plus people on the planet? But He did call us, and He expects certain things from us. In 1 Peter 1, we're given a glimpse as to the attitude, the way in which we should do things in the calling that He has given us. 1 Peter 1 and in verse 15, Peter writes here, "But as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all of your conduct." Holiness in all of our conduct. Do we think of giving as an act of holiness? I don't know many people that do. There are some people that are really good at giving. But again, I think part of what will bring down the societies around us is a lack of so much of what we're talking about today. Because part of the calling God gives us is to be givers. That can be givers of time. It can be givers of money. It can be givers to sacrifice convenience or position. It can be giving on all kinds of level. And the Bible is replete with examples of those. David gave the materials and the money necessary for building the temple. You remember God told him, "I won't let you do this. You have too much blood on your hands." But He did let David collect everything. It's called Solomon's temple. All he did was assemble it. It's really David's temple, isn't it? We have the example of Elisha and the widow. She had to give so he could. We had the gifts from the Magi. Those were expensive gifts. Those were gifts for a king, obviously, but nonetheless expensive gifts. Do you ever stop to consider that when they presented those, there was no expectation of how that was used? They didn't say to Joseph and Mary, "Now put this in an IRA. When he gets to be..." There was nothing like that. You know, they didn't say you have to spend it a certain way or don't spend it until he's a certain age. They were gifts. We have the example of Barnabas in the first part of Acts, the gift he gave to the church of his land. Now, there were some that will say, well, according to the Jewish law, he would get that back. And so, but nonetheless, it was a gift, wasn't it? He didn't have to do that at all. But he did. We have the example a little bit later there in Acts of Cornelius, a Roman. You remember what it said about him? He gave to the church. He supported the Jews in their worship, building synagogues. How many people that you know have enough extra cash that they'll just build a church for you? Especially someone who doesn't or hasn't grown up in the same culture or religious beliefs. We have the example of Zacchaeus. You know, he pledged to give half his wealth to the poor. And he also promised to repay those he had cheated. He was a tax collector. That was kind of part of the job description. But he promised to repay any of those that he had cheated more than 10 times. There are more examples that we could turn to, but let's then stop and consider the question, how do we get out of a getting mode and into a giving mode? The first point then would be to ask God to place within you the attitude to give and share. Let's turn to Galatians chapter 5. We often read this list. Sometimes we go through it. We might ponder some things, but I think sometimes we also miss a lot in this list. Galatians 5 here, we're talking about fruits of the Spirit. Galatians 5, verse 22, where it talks about fruits of the Spirit, obviously, first couple, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness is the one I want to focus on. Goodness. In the Greek, the indication there is generosity. Someone who is generous. Now, my parents came into the church back in the late 60s. And we had for, I don't know how long, better part of a year, we had another family that lived with us. They had been renting, they lost their home, I don't know the whole situation because I was probably only 8 or 9 at the time. But they literally lived with us. Our basement was filled with their stuff. Their boxes, their furniture, all their possessions until they could secure a new location. That's a huge sacrifice to blend families like that. But that was not uncommon during that time. Could we do that sort of thing again? If we're asking God to place within us the attitude to give and share, that's not always going to be convenient. But to the point of Galatians 5:22 here, it should be in an attitude of generosity. We read that as well in Romans chapter 12. Paul says this in a slightly different way, but it's the same thought. Romans 12 and verse 8, where he says, here talking about the spiritual gifts, we went through those some weeks back. He who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality. If it's ever okay to be a liberal, it's when you give. Don't hold back. Whatever you can do to help. In fact, we have recorded in Acts 20 an interesting thought that's not recorded in the gospel accounts. Paul records this for us. Acts 20 and verse 35. He says, I have shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak. Now, Paul gave an example of how to serve by serving himself. He says, I've given you that example. And he backs that up by saying, and remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Now, think of that statement. Is that a zero-sum game? What I mean by that is, picture a pie. The pie is a 10-inch pie. You can only cut so much pie out of that pie until it's gone, right? Most people think of things in the world as being a zero-sum. There's only so much of it. To use the analogy and make it sort of silly by way of illustration here, God's pie never empties. You can cut out the slices and there's always more left. It is more blessed to give than to receive. Think of that. In fact, I don't think we think about the implications of that. Can you give something in receiving as well? You can. I've been there. I suspect many of you have as well. Somebody truly wants to give you something. You don't really need it, but this is meaningful. Something that is meaningful to them, they want to pass on to you for whatever reason. If you insist and say no, you've restricted a blessing to that person. But in receiving it, you've given them the opportunity to receive a blessing as well. Where does that end? More importantly, why would you want to end that? Can you imagine where that would end, the ripples that would go out from that? So we need to ask God to place within us the attitude to give and to share. Second point, then, is make a plan for giving. Most people would say, well, how can you do that? Well, God says, person that's thinking right, Isaiah 32 verse 8, a person that's thinking down the road will consider these things and make them part of their life. Isaiah 32 and in verse 8. A generous man devises generous things, and by generosity he will stand. For the sake of my point, he makes a plan for giving. How do you do that? We plan for all sorts of things in life, don't we? We plan for trips, and we might set aside money. We spend the time researching what kind of fun things we can do at this location or how much time it's going to take us to get there or maybe stops we'll make along the way. We do plans like that all the time. We plan for college or careers. We plan for marriages. We plan for all sorts of things. Why not giving? So how do we do that? How do we become a generous man who devises generous things? Well, we can plan for these opportunities, plan to have people over. You know, when I was a boy as well, again, when my parents first came into the church, every Sabbath, part of what we did to get ready for church was to take extra clothes with us. and to plan to take extra food with us. Because I can't remember for I don't know how long that we went to church that we never went home afterwards. We always went to somebody's house. We don't do that much anymore. But we can plan for those opportunities. Part of it is, I know that we're much more scattered than we were then, but we can still plan for them. What if we set aside some of those physical things? What if we don't have money? Well, I don't have the time or the skills to cook for people. All right, what about planning intercessions in your prayers for others? Yesterday, I sent out the updated prayer list of individuals for the last number of years that have asked for prayers. What if your giving is to pray for them? I still remember that as a boy as well. There was one young man my age, and that's probably why my prayers were so fervent on this matter. Ran into a deep health issue and probably could have died. I remember praying for him for a long, long time, more than a month. What about planning for offerings? Oftentimes it saddens me to hear how people will just sort of think, well, what do I have extra in my budget that I can give God when an offering comes around? You know, we should be planning that. That shouldn't be something that's left until a week before to figure out what we can do. A generous man devises generous things. You find opportunities. Somebody mentions something offhandedly in a conversation, and you know that you can help with that. Giving individuals rides to church, that's come up recently. What does it take to go out of our way? There was one young man, as I was older, he's probably 19 or 20, he had transferred from Northwest Ohio up near Youngstown area. He was going to college at Miami of Ohio every Sabbath for, about 3 years. I drove up and took him to church because he didn't have a car at the university. You can find those opportunities if you're looking for them. Psalm chapter 37. When that outlook is there, if we're asking God to place within us the attitude to give and share, then we will find opportunities and it will become easier to think in that mode, to be able to and to start to make a plan to find those opportunities. In Psalm 37 and verse 18, it says, "The Eternal knows the days of the upright, and their inheritance shall be forever. They shall not be ashamed in the evil time, and in the days of famine they shall be satisfied. But the wicked will perish, and the enemies of the Eternal, like the splendor of the meadows, shall vanish in the smoke, they will vanish away." Verse 21, "The wicked borrows and does not repay." That is, they don't have the intent of repaying. Wonder how much that factors into our current financial problems around the world. "But the righteous shows mercy and gives. For those blessed by him shall inherit the earth, but those cursed by him shall be cut off." We should be able to insert our name here as the righteous man. Does God remember what we do? Verse 25, "I have been young and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken nor his descendants begging for bread. He is ever merciful and lends, and his descendants are blessed." You know, people like to recite the wonderful things they see in others, perhaps that exhibit this to a degree, but oftentimes it doesn't sink in and begin to make a change in their life, does it? Usually, unfortunately, in the world around us, people take advantage of generous situations or people. You know, in Africa, Melvin Rhodes, I've talked with a couple of times, he says they can't announce potlucks over there. Now, bear in mind, in Africa, they don't have many opportunities to worship in a place like this. It's a small building, usually cinder block. It's a tin roof. It's usually pretty hot, so there are no windows. So when they have a service, anybody walking by can hear what's going on. And oftentimes they do. They just stop and hang out by the window and they listen to what's going on. Well, if they announce food, they have all kinds of people show up. Now, you can understand why in most cases, because they don't have much. But still, they weren't invited. but they're going to take advantage of it. Free food. Who'd turn that down? God says here, though, more importantly, he says he remembers the righteous. He's not going to let them be forsaken. And as we talked about earlier, God wants us to reflect his holiness. So we need to make a plan for giving. The next point then is to give, especially to those who cannot repay. James chapter 1. James records this as God inspired, as pure religion. James 1 verse 27. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this: to visit the orphans and widows in their troubles and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. Why the orphans and the widows? Because in most cases they can't take care of themselves. Now, that's, as we talked about earlier, all kinds of ways to do that. It can be time. Both of those categories, an orphan and a widow, probably more than anything else, would value your time. To know that you care, to sit and hear their stories. You know, one of the best times of my life was when I was 19 or so. I had my own vehicle. Every long weekend after college or during college, I would go from Ohio down to Florida and I'd sit with my grandfather. You know, I'd go out to the beaches a couple of times, but I loved spending time and hearing his stories. And I found out things about my grandfather nobody else in the family knew about because I took the time to hear his stories. Luke chapter 6 talks about this giving to those who can't repay. Luke 6 and verse 30, we'll start. Give to everyone who asks of you, and from him who takes away your goods, do not ask them back. That's hard to do, isn't it? We like our stuff. Wasn't a big fan of the comedian George Carlin. He's dead now, but he had a great routine on stuff. We like our stuff. It's hard when someone takes something. But he says, and just as you want men to do to you, you also do to them likewise. This is what people call the golden rule. But if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And I use the story of Christmas cards. Maybe those in your family or at work, you hear about this, but that's a continual process, isn't it? Weeding down that Christmas card list. Well, they didn't send me a card last year, so I can scratch them off. If they sent me a card, even if I don't like them, I probably got to send them a card again. God says, you know, even sinners do that. That's not what we're supposed to do. That's tit for tat. They had me over to their house. Now I've got to have them over to mine. Verse 33 says, and if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? If you lend to those whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? One of the best pieces of advice my dad gave me years ago was, don't ever lend out money that you're not willing to not get back. If you don't get it back, you're not expecting it back, then it doesn't hurt the relationship, does it? But if you're expecting that money back and you don't, that'll ruin it in a heartbeat, won't it? I've seen families split over that, business partners split over that. It's ruined lives. It's amazing what people will sue for. Mostly it's not worth suing over. Verse 35, but love enemies, do good, and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great. You will be the sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the unthankful and the evil. Why should we do that? Remember where we started out? We're supposed to reflect God, right? Who's holy? How much is this world given back to God? And yet, He continues to give, doesn't He? You know, if He really wanted to be the hard God that so many think that He is, all He'd have to do is stop caring for one moment and we'd all perish. And yet, He says, He's a reminder here, He says, Do good and lend, hoping for nothing in return. Give to those who cannot repay. God will acknowledge that. We don't have to trumpet that around. God will know. Last point then is realize that you cannot outgive God. I mentioned this earlier. Luke chapter 6, let's look at verse 38. Give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together. Don't be cheap, God says. You know, if you've ever gone and bought something loose volume, grain, you know, and you have the guy scoop it out and he gets the stuff at the top, you know, the loose stuff. It might fill up the container, but that's not a full measure, is it? Because if you kind of vibrate it a little bit, shake it, you can see it sort of settle down. God says, don't do that. If you're going to give, make it a good measure. Press it down. Shake it together so that it's running over. Notice why, he says. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. I mentioned those rich people that tend to be cheap. Warren Buffett. How many of you know who Warren Buffett is? Probably one of the richest men on the planet. He just bought, I forget how many millions of shares in Bank of America. I mean, he's got that kind of money. He can just drop that kind of coin. You know, he never buys a new car. He's so cheap. His car is, I think it's a 10-year-old Mercedes or something. It's still a nice car, but he refuses to buy a new car. This is a guy that can spend millions and millions of dollars to buy shares in some bank, and he says, I won't buy them because they depreciate too fast. Now, the thing about cheapness is it can reflect in relationships, can it? I'm not saying that's where Warren Buffett is, but I'm saying as a whole, oftentimes when you look at people that are rich that are cheap, they're not surrounded by a lot of good friends, are they? They're surrounded by hangers-on, people that might want to maybe have some of that, if only by the crumbs, but they don't usually have a very good life. My aunt had a great saying. She said, money won't buy you happiness, but at least you can be miserable in a better part of town. That's about all it's good for, right? If you're not going to use it for good things, then you're just going to be miserable in a better part of town. God says don't do that. He says give a good measure. Make sure it's shaken down. Make sure it's more than they expect. There's a cycle in that effect. Give, God says, and I will give back to you. That's what he says there. Same measure that you use will be measured back to you. If you want generosity shown to you, we have to show generosity out. It's as simple as that. If you want to write in your notes, 2 Corinthians 9:6, where it says, if you sow sparingly, you will reap sparingly. If you sow bountifully, you will reap bountifully. As we conclude, though, let's turn to Matthew chapter 14. A great story here of the fishes and loaves. I've often wondered about this little boy. Matthew 14 and verse 13 says, when Jesus heard it, he departed from them by boat to a place by himself. But when the multitudes heard, they followed him on foot from the cities. And when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude. And he was moved with compassion for them. He didn't have to do anything for them. He could have stood up and said, look, people, I just want some quiet. Go away. But he took care of their needs. It says he healed their sick. And when it was evening, so whatever portion of the day he used to serve them, time was running out. And his disciples came and said, look, we're far out here in the desert. And it's late. Send these people home so they can go buy food. Notice what Jesus then says to them, verse 16. He says, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. And I picture them all doing, you know, looking around for the bags of food. What am I going to give them? So they said to them, look, we've only got 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now, from the other accounts of this story, this was a young boy's thing. This wasn't even really theirs. But we've got just this little amount. And he said, bring it to me. Now, what did we read earlier about God multiplying what we put out there? This is that principle in action. And so he said, he commanded the multitude to sit down on the grass. He ordered them out. He organized it, if you will. Wasn't all haphazard. He took the 5 loaves, the 2 fish, looked up to heaven. He blessed and broke, gave the loaves to the disciples, and the disciples gave to the multitude. They all ate and they were filled. God wasn't cheap in his giving. He gave enough that they were probably patting their stomachs and saying, oh, I couldn't eat another fish if I had to. And they took up. So they police the area. They're not going to just let the trash be there. So they go through and they pick up all the scraps. And it's 12 baskets of the fragments that remain. More than they even started out with. God just didn't replace what that boy had. He had 12 baskets. Now, this is just my personal thought, but I've often wondered if it wouldn't have been a great lesson to disciples if Christ had them carry the baskets for this boy home. Because what would he have done if he'd shown up and his dad says, boy, where are those 5 loaves and those 2 fish? Oh, I gave them away. Yeah, his dad wouldn't be very happy, would he? But if he shows up with 12 baskets, where did you get that? It was a blessing because I gave this to others to eat. And we read there in verse 21 that there were about 5,000 men, not counting the women and children, that were fed. Realize that you cannot outgive God. If we ask God to place within us the attitude to give and share, if we make a plan for giving, and we give especially to those who cannot repay, then we cannot outgive God. Giving should be part of our way of life as a Christian. Let's remember that. Let's apply that. Let's listen and remember the examples of giving that are in the Scriptures. Let's reflect God's giving way of life, the doctrine of godly giving.